What does Christian nationalism and the right to bear arms have in common? Now, outside of the political frame, these two things might be seen as very disconnected subjects. They might be seen as different ideas entirely. But if you look at it in a whole holistic, even to go a little woo-woo on the subject, if you're to look at it in a holistic worldview, you recognize that one of the things that ties those two together is metaphysics. But perhaps more, more recent, that's not even imperative, but more concerning in recent history is how the two subjects are engaged in public rhetoric, or how we talk about it publicly, or even more specifically, arguments used against them. And a common tactic of sorts is the horns of a dilemma, and that is that you have to choose between two options that are bad in their own right, and the person who asks the question isn't so much asking the question out of genuine interest in your answer, but so they can choose which one of their argument trees they're going to follow down with. Now, the horns of a dilemma is, or the idea of the horns of a dilemma is a philosophical construct that has to do with dealing with difficult decisions, particularly ones where if you choose one, you get gouged by the other horn, and vice versa. So you have to choose between, in a sense, the lesser of two evils, but it's not a lesser issue. It's more you have to choose. If you choose one option, you get gouged by the other. Or if you choose one direction, it comes with its own plights. And then if you choose another answer, you get you're gouged by its response. It might be seen as a trap, but then you also have the problems of false dichotomies, which would be an argument that it is not such that those are the only two options. If you're familiar with the rules of logic, that the rules of logic being simply identity, A is a statement is a statement, an idea is an idea, and the law of excluded middle, it is either true or not true. There is no third option. And the law of non-contradiction, where something cannot be true and not true at the same time, you can see how this fits within the conjunction of rhetoric and logic. But if we're engaging in it with subjects such as Christianity in the West, as well as guns, gun control, the right to bear arms, and so forth, there is a certain strategy that's wielded that might be as simply described the false dichotomy. So let's start with Christian nationalism. There's been no shortage of media attention to the idea of Christian nationalism in recent history, whether it's through MSNBC or through presidents and vice presidents and public speakers talking about how Christian nationalism is the greatest threat to the West or to our democracy, to our revolution, whatever language you want to say. But that doesn't exactly explain the argument, and the argument being said that whatever Christian nationalism is, it is evil, which again is another entire vein of conversation. But what I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to give you a tool to diffuse a trap, not only a trap that is meant for rhetoric to put you in a position of compromise in a conversation, but also to give you some tools on how you think about something. And so we're going to start with Christian nationalism, and then we're going to move into guns and gun control and the right to bear arms. So let's begin. So in the language of Christian nationalism, something that's being brought up recently is this idea that there is a dichotomy. There's a difference between being a Christian in one pillar and being a Christian nationalist in another. And while Christian nationalism is a topic of much debate, what we have to be clear on is addressing the rhetoric that's used sort of as an emotional trap to keep you from committing to any answer whatsoever. And if you're a Christian in this day, if you believe in Christ, if you believe in those, the values that he creates, then you're going to be faced with a challenge. And that is, The horns of the dilemma that you're going to choose are between hypocrite and Christian nationalist.
You are going to have to choose between being somebody who is
Christian in name only, but doesn't really hold up to the tenets, and a Christian nationalist, which is bad by default for whatever reason. And I'm not, and this kind of argumentation, this kind of debate, this kind of dialectic, it's not even a dialectic in itself, is a issue because what happens is, and how this is presented is that Christian nationalism is bad by either default or by some sort of argument. And because it's bad, there has to be an alternative, essentially a way out for Christians. And I had a conversation recently with one James Lindsay, which is why I'm re-recording this episode, because I had mic issues earlier, and then we had our conversation, and now I'm talking here. That has to do with how, in a rhetorical sense, the person being accused is given a way out, but that way out isn't really secure. So Christian nationalism being the boogeyman of the political sphere for certain groups argues that whatever Christian nationalism is a threat to the world. It's a threat to the West. It's some sort of authoritarianism, and that's kind of, I'm going to leave that bit over there because it's not important to the mechanism of the argument. The mechanism of the argument suggests that you are either a Christian nationalist or a regular Christian, whatever that means. And being a regular Christian, though, however, is not the safe harbor that's presented, because if you are a Christian, just a regular Christian, now you have an infinite amount of accusations for being hypocritical. Because if you choose the route of, if you decide to act on your faith and you decide to take care of the poor or follow the tenets of Jesus or follow the Old and New Testament at all, then you're a Christian nationalist. But if you don't follow those things but still claim to be a Christian, then you must be a hypocrite. And what you have in the middle of those two horns is a judge choosing which spike to stab you on with no argumentation, no idea, no will to recognize that the horns are not the only two options, and that their intent in the accusation is to gouge you on one horn or the other. So if you think that you can appease the mob, if you can be both in the world and of the world, you can be soft but also somehow faithful, you're going to be gouged on the horn which regards you as nothing but a hypocrite. And if we look at Christian theology in Romans and in the New Testament, as well as some issues in the Old Testament, we recognize that no one is perfect, no one can be righteous, but that is not the same theology that's held by the accuser. And so when it comes to the idea of guns and gun control, we see a similar issue here, is that you're either, say, you know, a right-wing gun nut, or you are constantly finding ways to appease the mob for not being a right-wing gun nut. It's almost like a Kafka trap. It's almost like an intellectual trap intended to take you and force you into a conversation or force you into a debate with no winning option, not in good faith, as if I have beat you in a game of chess, but rather by setting the stage, presenting it as if it was even, but in a sense cheating and slating the pieces in my favor. So you and I are going to go play a game of chess, and that sounds great. But when you sit down at the table, you realize that the entire back row that I have, sans the king, are all queens, because I have an infinite number. I'm a polyamorous chess player. So in this sense, the game is rigged, because I have all of the best pieces all of the time, but you have to work with only what you're dealt with. The concern for Christians, before I move full on into firearms and rights in that sense, must begin with this. In a sense, the argument actually will help us out. It kind of reveals the game that's being played. And that is, once the dilemma is presented, or once the situation is presented such that you have to choose between being a Christian nationalist or being a hypocrite, the game is kind of rigged. You know, you figured out the game is up, and the real game that's being presented is that you are being expected to appeal to a judge that doesn't hold the values that you hold, or doesn't hold the values that are presented in your faith. And how this plays out in a more thorough sense is described in the scriptures as being in the world but not of the world. Now, if you reach outside, or if you find certain conversations, you'll see that people will talk about the world inside the West versus the world outside the West as evidence of evil, or there is evidence of evil, people doing evil things for the sake of being evil. And evil is it's not necessarily difficult in its own sense. Sometimes it's very straightforward, and sometimes it's very complicated, or sometimes it's very subversive. But one of the simplest forms, and perhaps purest forms, of describing evil is hating that which is good because it is good. And when you recognize that that is a possibility that people may engage in, that is something that people may choose. In fact, in some cases, that is what people naturally choose. They choose to hate that which is good because it is good. You recognize that the dilemma is set up to trap the good between two horns, not in good faith, but for the purpose of justifying their own evil. And in guns and gun control and the right to bear arms, we see this issue very oftentimes presented in not even esoteric ways, but ways that are presented very complicated but actually turn out to be very simple, is that we believe that an individual has a right to bear arms for the sake of their own preservation, that they may participate willingly in their environment fully to their capabilities instead of hindered by their being muted or being subjugated in that sense, so that their voluntary participation has maximal opportunities, or, you know, these are kind of a almost technical way of saying people with the right to bear arms choose to do what is good because it is good, or they choose to do what is evil because it is evil. Instead, you have the, if you take that away from them, they only then choose to do what is good theoretically because it is expedient, and then you have a society that cannot sustain itself because there is no good to be found. It is just evil in masquerading forms. The same dilemma, the same horns of the dilemma, are brought up in the form of gun control, is that you either have defiance, in a sense. You have the one horn of the dilemma, the one thing to be gouged upon, is that you are either in opposition to, say, the death of innocents, or, and that would be, well, you support the NRA. It's kind of the generic gun control argument that there's blood on the hands of Republicans, or you are complicit in its destruction by proxy. And so these problems build themselves up in these rhetorical arguments, these presentations, in a simplest sense, cause problems in the way that we think about what is right and true and good, because we subjugate ourselves to somebody else's question without evaluating whether or not that question is honest. So what does this have to do with being in the world but not of the world? Well, if you are in the world, you know, we live here, we exist in this reality. You want to talk about metaphysics and planes of reality, this is where we live. But if you want to say of the world, where do we ascertain our moral framework? And if we ascertain our moral framework from within the world, we will constantly be subjected to these kinds of traps with no resolution. And what does that mean going forward? How does that answer our questions? How does that engage in the subject that we're talking to about at all? Well, in the sense of Christian nationalism and the dilemma between being gouged on the horn of being condemned, maybe even violently persecuted as a Christian nationalist, or being considered a hypocrite or a heretic in a different frame. Heretic in the frame of Saint Cyprian. If we are going to engage in that one, then what we are recognizing or what we are believing is that our conditions for belief are built on whether or not other people believe it. In the same way, the idea of firearms ownership and the right to bear arms is, do we believe that it is right because it is right, or do we believe that it is right because it produces a utilitarian outcome? Thus, in the gun control argument, it is a trap. It is always a trap because we don't believe in the right to bear arms because of some sort of numbers game about how many people do this or do that or provide this or provide that or commit this crime or don't commit this crime. We believe that the individual, by dint of being an individual, by the rote fact of being an individual created in the image of God, has a right to bear arms for the sake of their self-preservation. And that we wrestle with that when there are conflicts between peoples, seeking ways to resolve those conflicts that are less than violent. But a cheap answer, a cheap outcome, a slave choice would be to say, let us give up our right to bear arms for somebody else to be the adjudicator, who that judge of sorts is not interested in us as individuals, but as sort of a utilitarian outcome. Ultimately, we face an issue of, why do we believe what we believe? Do we believe what is right because it is right? Do we believe what is good because it is good? Or do we believe it because it makes us feel better or because it gives us some advantage in an arena? Do we hold on to the idea of, do we believe in Christianity, or do we call ourselves Christians because it is expedient to the moment, or is it because we think it is true? And if we are faced with that dilemma between being a hypocrite or being accused of a Christian nationalist, there is a sort of weight that tips the scales in a certain direction. However, to conclude, and to conclude this as the second attempt at recording this episode, the ideas that we face, and something that I want to prepare you for, is the dilemma that you will be faced with, is that the way that Christian nationalism is being portrayed as some sort of, it's not even extremism, but the way that Christian nationalism is being portrayed is a pitfall that you can avoid, so you can run into safe harbor for something that will be less dangerous to you in perception. But the cost is you must choose hypocrisy. And the same thing happens in gun control. The same argument happens in gun control. The same rhetorical strategy is happening in the conversation about gun control, which requires you to concede to the worldview of the accuser and then find yourself hung on one of two gallows. Do you believe that gun control is an argument of utilitarianism, that we can produce a utilitarian outcome by restricting people's rights? Or do you believe that the government has some sort of authority over, not even the elected government at that point, the government has some sort of authority over you providing for your family? If we can address those issues, then we are building a foundation for ourselves. We desire to do what is right because it is right, not because it is subjective or convenient for the moment. And so, that being the case, this being the second attempt at this recording, we are going to close it up and leave it for you. If you want to support the show, you can head over to redactedculture.locals.com, or you can head over to redactedllc.com, and we will see you there. But this has been a kind of impromptu recorded compiled episode on one of the challenges that we're facing when it comes to hypocrisy versus Christian nationalism, being faced with the horns of dilemmas, and
addressing some phrasing, even some rhetorical strategies, some framework
meant to entrap you. If you're being forced between hypocrisy and evil, well, there might be a trap there laid. So,
that being the case, go forth and conquer.